bills.
Yeah. Okay. So we are holding. We're holding on Sadiq Rav Amr Aleph by the Mishnah.
Mishnah.
And a rather long Mishnah it is. Okay. So we're still talking about the Lechem Aponim and the Shtei Lechem. But first, we're going to start with something else. Actually, we mentioned in the previous Mishnah. One second. Okay. Yeah, you should be in now. Okay. You can hear us, right? No. Okay, yeah. Okay, so we learned in the previous Mishnah that the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem Aponim, we had a three-way machlokes, what has to be done as far as the kneading and shaping and baking of them. Is it that the kneading and shaping can be done outside the Azara, they just have to be baked in the Azara, which was the Tanakama? Is it that all of it has to be done in the Azara, which was Rabbi Yehuda, or is all of it can be done outside the Azara, like which was Rabbi Shimon? So now, talking about a similar thing, we learned about another mincha we've learned many times in our Masechet, Chavite Kohen Gadol, the daily mincha that the Kohen Gadol would bring, where he brought half Nisarin in the morning and half in the afternoon.
Chavite,
we said, they're made in a machbas, they're made in a pan. So those, the shots and varichos and vafi yosin b'fnim, those, everything of them, the kneading and the shaping and the baking, all takes place inside the Azara. So Rashi gives the reason for that as because yesterday we were discussing, when we discussed the question about the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem Aponim, for those the flour is measured using the Isorin measuring cup. And we discussed in a previous perek whether that measuring cup was nimshach or not. Was it anointed as a klisharis? So if you say that yes, then it has to be done inside. If not, then not. However, Rashi says the half Isorin was definitely nimshach because the half Isorin was only used for the Kohen Gadol's Chavitin. When we learned about the measuring cup, we said that was the only purpose for the half Isorin. There's no other mincha that's brought as a half Isorin. But the one Isorin measuring cup, according to some opinions, they didn't make it into a free shares because everybody measures their mincha with it, and sometimes they might end up taking it outside the Azara. But the half Isorin, which is only used for the Chavitin, they would keep that in the Azara anyway, and therefore they might as well be Mashiach. Tosfos learns differently. Obviously, they're offered inside the Azara, like everything else, but we're saying that they have every day. Yeah. But the point is that therefore the half Isorin could be Nimshach. Okay, that's how Rashi learns. Tosfos disagrees with Rashi on various grounds, including that if we discussed whether the Midas Yavish were Niskadish or not, we didn't distinguish between the Isorin and the half Isorin. The Tosfos says rather the reason is because of the oil involved. The Shtei Lechem and the Lechem Aponim didn't involve oil. The Chavitin did. The oil was measured with a kli sharis. Yep, definitely. We said the clay alach, the cups that were used for measuring liquids in the Beit Mikdash were definitely clay alach. So therefore, once we have that, when we have to knead and shape and bake the chavite kohen gadol, where that involves you have to first have measured out the oil using a kli sharis. So then already you're going to do it inside the azara. You're not going to measure it in a kli sharis and then take it outside the azara.
So one thing you could say, as soon as the dough mixes with the oil, the dough itself becomes straight edge.
Well, there's that, but the point is that therefore, because the oil itself is measured with the kli sharis, therefore we're not going to take it outside the azara either, because it would become possible, or even if it's not going to become possible, it would be ignited. And continues the mission of a dose of the Shabbos, and the making and the kneading and the baking of the chavite kohen gadol is dose of Shabbos, because it has to be done on Shabbos. It couldn't have been done before, because again, you'd have the problem of lina. Plus, also, we learned earlier in the Masechta that if it was done too far in advance, then they become unattractive, and the Pasuk makes a point of saying tufine, that they have to look nice.
Lina is more important than Shabbos.
Well, because if it's going to become possible for the lina, then same as any other carbon. But that's the rule. On the other hand, when it comes to the grinding of the flour and the sifting it for the chavite kohen gadol, ain't a derech for Shabbos. That's not derech for Shabbos because that could have equally well been done before Shabbos. Klal Amar Rav Akiva. Hakadosh means sifting them. Klal Amar Rav Akiva. So Rav Akiva says a general rule, which we find in a few other places in Shas. Kol malacha she'efshal la'asoyt me'erev Shabbos, ein adocha at the Shabbos. Any malach, we could discuss it earlier in our Masechta, also in connection with Chol. Yeah, no, well, we said Rav Eliezer disagrees, right? But the halacha is like Rav Akiva. Any malacha that could have been done on Erev Shabbos, ein adocha at the Shabbos, does not override Shabbos. So therefore, the grinding and the sifting of the flour, doesn't have to be done with nim. There's no problem with lina with it. That can be done Erev Shabbos, and if they didn't, then tough luck. he asks lalasos, Meir Shabbos, any malacha that could only have been done on Shabbos, in this case, the actual kneading and baking of the chavitin, because it can't be done the day before, again, because of lina, they're not going to look so attractive, then Zorcha Shabbos, that is Zorcha Shabbos. Rabbi Yankel, if you don't mind, can you put your phone on mute, actually?
Hello?
Can you put your phone on mute? And then if you have a question to ask, then unmute it, and you can ask. But,
I have it on my cell phone. I'll put it on my digital phone. I can hang up the cell phone.
Okay, as you wish. But, I'm saying you could just mute it, but whatever, okay. Alright, fine. So that's your Akiva's rule, and therefore the okay, continues the law. So that's the law, yeah. It comes up in connection with Mila, it comes up in connection with the Korban Pesach, yeah. Continues the Mishnah. Kol ha-menachos yesh behen ma'asek kli b'fnim. All the menachos, there is what's done with a kli inside the Azara. Ve'en behen ma'asek kli b'chus. There's nothing done with them with a keli outside the Azara. So there's a few different explanations of what that means. Rashi explains that it means this that we said about the chavite kohen gadol is true not just of them. Okay. Alright, so kol ha-menachos yesh behen ma'asek kli b'fnim, all menachos, there is what's done with a keli inside the Azara. No, this is according to everybody. Ve'en behen ma'asek kli b'chus, there's no ma'aser with a keli with them outside the Azara.
Once they've been involved.
One second. So what does that mean? So you have a few explanations. Rashi says that it's similar to what we just said. We said the minchas chavitin, that we said that the kneading and the shaping and the baking of them is all done in the Azara.
Right.
So according to Rashi, what the Mishnah means is the same thing is true of all the other menachos. They also have to be kneaded and shaped, everything using clay sharis inside the Azara. They can't be kneaded or whatever outside the Azara. And again, that would fit with Tosfos' reason before about the oil, because most menachos involve oil, and therefore once the oil is measured with a clay sharis, then it has to stay inside. Tosfos themselves has a different explanation of this ma'asek kli b'fnim and b'chutz. They say what it means is that when it comes to, we just said about minchas chavitin, that the grinding of the flour and the sifting of the flour doesn't have to be done in the Azara, and therefore it's not there for Shabbos. So similarly with other menachos, ma'aser kli means anything that has to be done with the kli sharis. The grinding and the sifting doesn't have to be done with the kli sharis. Therefore, that's what we mean, that anything that has to be done with ma'aser kli, that has to be done with the kli sharis, has to be b'fnim, but anything that does not involve a kli sharis.
One proposition goes with the other one automatically.
No.
If you say that with a kli, it has to be done within the Azara. Without a kli sharet, it can be done outside the Azara.
No, well, that's what we're saying. Ve'en behen ma'asek kli b'chutz. In other words, we're explaining the both halves of it, that anything that involves a kli sharet has to be done inside. Anything that does not require a kli sharet, namely, sometimes the Mishnah will do that. Sometimes the Mishnah will state it. Okay, you have a different explanation also. You have the Rambam's explanation, which also the Baruch Shemura brings, that it means anything that's done inside the Azara has to be done with an actual keli, as opposed to, for example, you can't, let's say, knead the mincha on a flat sheet, which is not a keli. As opposed to a kli sharis, in other words, yeah, it has to be something that has to be a kli kibble, something that has a receptacle. As opposed to anything that's done with the menachah, according to the Rambam, apparently doesn't mean that everything of them has to be done inside. Conceivably, they could be kneaded outside the Azara. And if they are, then they can be kneaded on a flat board or something. It doesn't have to be docked inside a keli. Okay. Fine. So that takes care of other menachahs. Now let's return to the Shteya Lechem and the Lechem Apart. Shteya lechem, oklan shiva tfachim, each of the shteya lechem is 7 tfachim long, the rochban dalad tfachim, each one is 4 tfachim wide, the karnosav arba'eth, look at the karnosav arba'eth boys, and the horns or the corners of it are 4 boys. So the length and width is obvious what that means. What do we mean by the horns? So there you have a couple of explanations. Rashi explains that it means on every corner of it, they stuck pieces of dough looking like horns. So the length of each of these horns was 4 tefachim.
Every corner?
The lechem apanim. Each one is square. Each one is square, right? They're not square. So each one is rectangular, rather, 7 by 4 tefachim. Mm-hmm. And we're saying that each of the 4 corners, yeah, they stuck on a piece of dough that stuck up, yeah, like the horns of the mizbeach or something, yeah.
What's the purpose?
The purpose is to make it look nicer or whatever. That's the Torah doesn't explicitly say it. So I think a number of the Mepharshim, that doesn't say it explicitly. I think a number of the Mepharshim say that maybe it's a lot of Mepharshim. It'd be nice. Anyway, so they have Karnei Seah or 4 tefachim. That's how Rashi learns what Karnei Seah are. The Rambam seems to say that Karnei Seah means the actual height of the, means the actual thickness of the bread. In which case, you have that, well, let's learn about the Lachem HaPanim, the same thing, and then we'll talk about there seems to be a problem with that. Lachem Aponim, Orkan Yud Tvachim, Verochan Hei Tvachim. The Lachem Aponim are each 10 Tvachim long and 5 Tvachim wide. The Karnos of Sheva, I suppose. And the Kronos, again, either the extra pieces of dough, according to Rashi, or the actual thickness of it, are according to the Rambam, are 7, I suppose. Now, you have
seven
a 7 as well, so we're 7 thumbwid, yeah. So there's 7 more thumbwid, so a little over a tefach. If a tefach, according to Rabbi Avraham Chaim knows, is about 3 inches, then you're talking about 3.5 inches.
Are we allowed to make halal shef today?
The pashtus, no? The pashtus, yeah, I don't see why not. Yeah, you're not allowed to make things like a kalim of the bismikdash. I've never heard that you're not allowed to make, I've never heard that you're not allowed to make replicas of the halal. Yes, not that I've heard of. Anyway. The real question is, now, I mentioned the other day that the Ralbag is the first one to point out a problem with the Rambam's understanding of Karnosov, that it means the thickness of the bread. Because, let's take first the Shalach. We're saying each Shalach is 7 by 4 Tvachim. So that means the surface area of it is 28 Tvachim. Now, each of the Shalach was made out of an Isara and a flour. If we calculate how much an Isaron is in cubic esbois, it comes out, and the Rambam himself writes it in Hilchos Bechoros, in Hilchos Bikurim rather, in Alachos Kala, that an Isaron is equal to 311 cubic esbois, and a fraction. 311 and about 1/10 cubic esbois. You can calculate it based on a Shiur Mikra. A mikra is 3 by 3, is 3 by 1 by 1 amos, and it contains 40 saw of water. So based on that, we can calculate how much, we can calculate the ratio, and we can figure out that an Isaron would be about 311 cubic esbois. Now, the surface area of each of the Shalachim, we're saying, is 7 by 4 Tvachim, which is 28 by 16 esbois, which is 448 square esbois. So if you have 311 cubic esbois of flour going into 448 square esbois of surface, the whole thing is going to be less than an esba thick. What kind of 4 esbois thick, like the Rambam is understanding our mission? And fine, you could explain, okay, the Shalachim are from this, they pop up, but not to that extent. So the Rabbag says, evidently, it's hard to understand what the Rambam means, apparently. And you have a similar calculation if you can make with the Lachem Aponim. A similar calculation. Each of the Lachem Aponim is made from 2 Esrenim. Same thing. Each one we're saying is 10 by 5 Tvachim, which comes out to 40 by 20 Esbois, so 800 cubic Esbois, 800 square Esbois. 800 square Esbois. The volume of it is 622 cubic Esbois, 311 times 2, 2 Esrenim. So again, you'd have that the average thickness of it would have to be less than an Esba for 622 cubic Esbois to go into 800 Esbois of surface. So how is it going to work? According to the Rambam, that they're respectively 4 and 7 Tvachim thick. So you have a
1.2.
No, less even. It would be less than. It's 622 divided by 800, or 311 divided by 448. Either way, you have something like 0.7 or 0.75 or something of an esba. Yeah. So how does it work? So you have a lot of rishonim and achronim take a lot of time explaining what's going on over here. There's a variety of explanations, including that maybe the Rambam means they were only thicker on the edges. Maybe the Rambam would agree with Rashi that we're talking about pieces of dough that were stuck on the edges, or maybe on the corners or whatever, to strengthen the corners or something, and therefore the Rambam calls that the thickness, because that's the maximum thickness of each challah, but not to say that the full thing was 4 or 7 esbois thick. You know, you have a few different ways of explaining it. So that's that thing. So the Lachem Aponim, so the Shteir Lachem and the Lachem Aponim, the Kashrus were much thinner than. One thing on top of that is also you have a Gemara in Pesachim that states that the Lachem Aponim was a tefach. Now a tefach is 4. So how are we saying over here 7? So 4 is not 7. Here we're saying 7 esbois. And if you say, as the Ralbag calculates, that each thing was less than each challah was less than the average thickness was less than an esba, where are you having your tefach thickness? So again, you have a couple of different, the Teferis Yisroel wants to say on it that each of these pieces on the corner we're saying was 7 esbois high. Maybe we could say it was 4 esbois thick, and that's the tefach thickness that we're talking about. Instead of saying, like this, you have the height of it, is given a 7th bow. You don't know how wide it could be. It could be a narrow piece. It could be whatever. But the Pharisee Surah learns that it was 7 high by 4th bows wide. So by 4 wide.
Instead of 7 by
1 wide or whatever. So that way, in other words, that would explain what the Gemara means over there when it says lach on the bottom of the text. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm actually sit there. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Let me give you a way to remember it, so you don't mix up what the numbers are. Remember the word zadad yahaz. Zadad is for the shtei lachem, 7 by 7 by 4. The yahaz is for the shtei, for the lachem on him, 10 by 5 by 7.
Okay.
Each one was bigger. Sure, each one was made from 2 extra items instead of 1 extra item. So that helps you remember. We know Rabbi Yehuda often does that kind of thing. Rabbi Yehuda knows the man's the money to talk about. So he also gives us a thing. Okay.
He gives that?
Yeah. Okay. Then Zoyma Omer. The Tiferity Surah also has a cute explanation of how the word Zadad Yahaz, what do they mean, that they should even signify anything to us. And he explains that Zadad is related to the word Dad, meaning a bosom, because the Shtei Lechem are the source that Hashem judges us about the grain at that time on Shavuos, and Hashem gives us a bounty of grain as a sort of mitzvah bring the Shtei Lechem. And Yahaz is related to a word meaning lying down, because the Lechem upon him lies on the Shulchan all week. Okay. Anyway. Fine. Then Zoma, when the pasuk says "Nafat al Hashulchan lechem ponim l'fanei tamid," it means lechem ponim means shiur leponim. It means that it has to have faces. So therefore, that's where we learn that it has to have this complicated shape. That it has to be the sides of it are bent up, or it's shaped like a boat, as we said the other day. It's shaped like an open box or like a boat. And also, you have these chronos that we just said that are on it. So you have this way. It has many different surfaces. You have a different understanding. You have a different understanding. Rashi says, ponim can also be, instead of ponim, the word can be pinim, which means corners, namely those crumbs, those extra pieces of dough that they stuck on. Okay. Now, let's figure out how the lachem aponim fits on the shulchan. Shulchan oka yud v'rocha.
When we rebuild the third temple, or build the third temple, which measurements are we going to use?
What do you mean, which measurements? The ones that the Sanhedrin of that time told us to use. No, we don't have a machloikus in the Mishnah. We have a machloikus among the Rishonim how to understand the Mishnah. Fine. So when the Mashiach comes, the Sanhedrin will look over the various opinions of the Rishonim and decide. Okay. Fine. Hashulchan orka yud v'roch v'chamisha. Now the Shulchan is 10 tfachiv. Now the pasuk describes the Shulchan as being 2 amos long by 1 amos wide. The first opinion that we have in our Mishnah, which is Rabbi Huda, is that the amos we're talking about over here are amos of 5 tfachim each. So therefore, 2 amos equals 10 tefachim. 1 amos equals 5 tefachim. Yeah. Hashulchan orka yud v'roch v'chamisha. The shulchan is 10 tefachim long and 5 wide. Lachem aponim orka yud v'roch v'hei. We just said the lachem aponim is also 10 by 5, but you have to have 2 stacks of lachem aponim, 6 loaves each on the shulchan. So how do you do that? Noisen orka k'neged roch v'shul shulchan. What you do is like this. You put the length of the challah on the width of the shulchan. So in other words, you have 5, the middle 5 tefachim of it sits on top of the shulchan, and then you have 5 tefachim, 2.5 on each side, hanging over the edges. What you do is, one second, the koifel tefachim mechtenikan, tefachim mechtenikan, then you fold the bread 2.5 tefachim on each side, and that's where you also have the kronos. So that way, in other words, so you start off with a slab 10 by 5, you fold, okay, for one second, so there's different understandings among the Rishonim. Does it mean that while they're making them as dough, they fold them into that shape, and then they bake them into that shape? You have Rishonim, in fact, I think Rashi over here seems to say that it means that they folded them after it was baked, in which case, I mean, it was made, we just said, it was relatively thin, it was less than an extra thick, right? So therefore, they made it in such a way that it had enough flexibility in it to be able to fold. But again, you have other understandings that it means that they folded it before it was baked. Okay, whatever the case, the point is that then you wind up. So again, we discussed the other day, we had the two opinions, Rav Chanina and Rav Yochanan, how the lechem aponim was shaped. We said it was either shaped like an open box, in that case, then you have the flap of it on the table, and then you have 2.5 on one side and 2.5 on the other side, making up the sides of it. And then you have the chronos sticking up, from those. Although we'll see in the Gemara they're actually folded inward, but we'll get to that. Anyway, that's according to the opinion that it was shaped like a, that it was shaped like a box, according to the opinion that it was shaped like a boat, then what it meant is, then what it meant is that the walls of the boat went up in a diagonal like this until they reached their full, until they reached their full width.
How would they rest on the shore?
So then you have the bottom, the keel of it rests on the shore. That's what we said the other day. We said the other day that you had the sniffim, not the sniffim, rather, you had the, we said you had the canyon and the sniffim or whatever that was shaped in such a way to be able to hold it up, to be able to hold it up from the side so it doesn't break. Okay. Anyway. So therefore, nimsa orka mimala rochva shol shofan. So it comes out that the, so it comes out. So now, what do you? So now you have two stacks of lechem apanim. Each one you have like that, six loaves, where each one is folded up like that. Five lying flat on the table, and two and a half going up, and another one on top of that, and another one on top of that, and so forth. So therefore, it comes out that the length of the lechem apanim filled up the entire width of the shofan. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's how Rabbi Yehuda says. And therefore, and it also comes out. Therefore, there's no space between one stack and the next. So the shulchan is 10 by 5. One stack is now 5 by 5 once you fold it up the side. And the other stack is also 5 by 5. So therefore, they exactly fit onto the shulchan, and there's no room for anything else. That's 10 by 5, we say. That's the idea of your order. Reb Meir says, no, we're talking about amos that are 6 tefachim each, the normal kind of amos that we usually think of. Therefore, HaShulchan Orka Yudbeis V'roch Leivav. Therefore, Reb Meir says, the Shulchan comes out, if it's 2 by 1 amos, it comes out 12 by 6. Lechem Aponim Orka Yud V'roch Leivav. He agrees that the Lechem Aponim was 10 by 5, because we didn't have machlokes about that. Therefore, Noisen Orka Kenegad Roch Leishol Shulchan. Again, you put the length to 10 fucking length of lechem aponim along the width of the shulchan, and you don't have quite as much sticking out,
which is six.
Then you fold up from the lechem aponim, you fold up on each side. Instead of like Rabbi Yehuda says, you have to fold up 2.5 on each side. According to Rabbi Meir, you're only folding 2 on each side. So you have 2, 6, and 2. That makes up the total 10 tefach width length of the lechem aponim. But yeah, 6 of it is sitting on the shulchan, 2 on one side, 2 on the other, and again, according to the opinion that it was boat shaped, it would mean similarly that you have a different kind of slope such that it comes out to a width of 6. So it comes out, therefore, according to the mayor then, so you have, so each stack of lechem aponim, therefore, comes out to be 6 by 5 once it's placed on the shulchan. Because you have, the 10 is folded down to 6, because you have only 6 of it is flat on the shulchan. And then you have each loaf is 5 tefachim wide, so each stack is 6 by 5, and then a height of 12 tefachim. So therefore, if you have 6 by 5, and another 6 by 5 on a shulchan that's 12 by 6, the tefachim rebach ba'emsa. So it comes out, Reb Meir says, unlike Reb Yehuda, who says that the two stacks were right next to each other with no space, Reb Meir says there was space between one stack and the next, 2 tefachim space. And the purpose of that space, Kadesh Hei Ruach Min Hashem. And the purpose of that was so that the wind, so that the air should be able to circulate between the two stacks of lechem aponim so they don't foil.
So we said the air circulated because of the...
Because of the canyon. We're going to discuss that next. Fine, that's between one challah and the next. Reb Meir is also concerned that you want to have between one stack and the next on the same level, right? Okay. Nevertheless, you still have to do B'derech HaTeva as much as possible, and maybe not always where they zocha to have that next. Yeah. Abashol goes further than Reb Meir. According to Reb Meir, the purpose of that two tefachim space is just for air circulation. Abashol is saying, in addition, they also place in that space, they put the two bozichi levona that go with the lachem apod in that two tefach space. Omrulo, so the chacham. The bozichi were small enough, I guess, that they'd fit. Omrulo, each one only had to hold a koinus, right? So a koinus is not that much. Yeah. Okay. Omrulo, the chacham said, what do you mean that they're between the stacks of lachem apod? The Pasuk says that you should place on the stack, Levona Zaka, pure Levona, implying that it should be on top of each stack, should be one Bazich. So Abishol answers them, so what? All of Masa Menashe. You have in the description of the camps of the Jewish people in the Midbar, it says that you have Shevet Ephraim, and then Olav, and on them was Shevet Masa Menashe. Obviously, it doesn't mean they were on top of them. It means they were next to them. So the same thing, the word Al doesn't necessarily, we discussed this earlier in the chapter, the word Al doesn't necessarily have to mean on top of, it can mean next to. So over here, the Bazichin are next to him. He learns.
And it's enough space.
And that's enough space. Two Tfachim would be enough space. Tfachim, yeah. Two Tfachim, yeah. Reb Levick, the Rebbe's father, has a fascinating explanation in Teretz Levi Yitzchak about many of the details that we're discussing so far. Most of the description goes into a detailed analysis of all everything that we're saying about the measurements and about the kanim that we're going to say next and so on and so forth, about what it represents, Beruchias, that represents Yichud Zachar and Akeva, etc. But he mentions at the beginning of it, he says, Why does Abishol have to bring a proof from Va'olav Matan Menashe? In all the camps of the Shavuot, you have the word Olav in connection with other ones also. You have by Yehuda, for example, it says Va'achonim Olav Matan Yisachar. Why is he waiting until Menashe? And he answers, the deeper idea behind it is because with the other ones, you could say that in a certain sense, yes, the second Shevet is higher than the first one. For example, Yehuda and Yisachar. Yehuda represents Malchus. Yisachar represents Torah. Torah is higher than Malchus. So therefore, Va'olav can literally mean that they're above that. As opposed to... Torah is higher than Malchus, yes. Gedolah Torah, yes. Kuruna Malchus. Gedolah Torah, Yosa Mina Kuruna, Umina Malchus. This doesn't take it up. It's in So therefore, on the other hand, when it comes to Ephraim and Menashe, you can't say that Menashe is greater than Ephraim. We know Yaakov specifically said Ephraim is greater than Menashe. So then there's no choice but to say that Va'olav means next to him rather than on top of him. That's why Abishol waits for that one. He goes on to explain a lot of things up the Kabbalah over there, but one interesting thing he points out, the word Mate Menashe and the name Abishol have a connection between them. If you take the gematria of Menashe and subtract from it Mate, what's left over is the gematria of Abishol. Therefore, it's very appropriate that Abishol is the one mentioning I don't know, you can figure it out. Menashe is 395, Mate is 54, whatever. You can do the math yourself, but it works out. So therefore, so that's why it's appropriate that Abishol specifically is the one mentioning this thing from Mate Menashe. Continues the Mishnah. Then they had, by the Shulchan over there, we discussed these the other day, there were four snifim, four side pieces made out of gold. No, the tubes are the next thing. That's the canning. Sniffing. First, we're talking about the side frame.
What are they,
the
rectangular?
One second. Mufusolin Meroshehen. They were Mufusolin near their top. So the question basically boils down to what Mufusolin means. So Mufusolin can mean that they branch out. So that I mentioned the other day, they have three major trends among the Rishonim to understand what the sniffing looks like. You have the Rambam understands that they look like, each one looks like a Y. You have a vertical pole, and then you have near the top of it, it forks into two.
And what's Mufusol?
So Mufusol, according to him, would mean branching, and you find sometimes the word Mufusol can mean branching. According to the Raivad, it also, Mufusol would mean branching, but he learns that it means that there was a branch coming out of it at each level, so you have
horizontally, by each of the
six Lachanapanim. And then you have Rashi and the Rashbam and many other Rishonim understand that the Snifim were slabs. And that Mufusolin doesn't mean branched, it means that they had cutouts in them. It means that they had holes or grooves cut in them for the canning to go into. I don't know how easy it is to find pictures just now in the middle of the shiur, but it's possible to find it. They use them to support the stacks of lachem upon him. Shnayim l'seder shnayim l'seder. You have two snifim for each stack of lachem upon him. So by the way, according to Rashi and according to the Raivad, means that the canon would actually rest on those pitzulim, on those holes or those branches or whatever. So in other words, the snifim would bear the weight of the canon, which in turn are bearing the weight of the lachem upon. According to the Rambam, it comes out that doesn't at all mean that the snifim are not bearing any of the weight. Because again, according to him, the snifim are just Y-shaped things. There's no holes or grooves or anything in them. Or branches to put the canning into. According to him, the purpose of the snifim is strictly, as we said the other day, to keep the ends of the lechem aponim from bowing outward, to keep each stack steady, but not to actually carry any of the weight. According to him, the entire weight was borne by each chalak from the one below it and by the canning. Then you had 20, now here we talk about the kanim, you had 28 kanim, kahasi konechol, each one was like a half of a hollow bamboo reed. So in other words, think of like a straw cut in half along its length. 14 for each staff of Lachan Achonim, and we'll learn later on in the Gemara, we'll get into Sadi Zayin, Sadi Tef, we'll get into why 14, how does 14 get evenly distributed among six Lachan Achonim, we'll get to that. So that's the idea. Again, according to most Rishonim, what it is the Kanim rested on the Sniffim, which in turn rested on the ground, or we had an opinion in the Gemara the other day that the Sniffim rested on the tabletop. According to the Rambam, the Sniffim rested on the ground, but they didn't actually bear any of the weight. The only thing that bore the weight was the Lechem Achonim itself and the Kanim. Okay. The Sniffim, according to the Rambam, didn't bear any weight. They're just there in order to keep each stack from shifting. But not actually hold any of them.
The Lechem Achonim was...
According to that, the Lechem Achonim would be. Well, we'll discuss later. We'll get into details later. But the first Lechem was on the tabletop. Then you had the Kanim, then the second one, then the Kanim, and so forth until the top one.
So the Shulchan was holding them, and the Sniffim were just...
We're just keeping them from bowing out and from shifting.
How did they keep the Sniffim?
Because they're
together.
Oh, how the Sniffim, I guess, were bolted or something to the table. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fine. Mishnah says, Loi Sidur Kanim Volenda Tilosam Dalchas Shabbat, putting up the Kanim between the Lachan Achonim and taking them out is not Dalchas Shabbat. Now, what's the problem of doing it that should be a problem with Shabbat? Rashi learns the problem is that it's like building. And building is a malacha on Shabbat. So even though, okay, technically this isn't building, it's only building involving Kalim, which is only also Dirabbanan, nevertheless, we would say that it's also Midrabbanan on Shabbat.
Putting
the Kanim in between the Lachem, especially, again, according to Rashi, you have to remember each end of the Kanim fits into one of these Pitzulim, into one of these holes in the Sniffin. So therefore, it really is like building. It's like building Lego or something. So therefore, according to him, that's the problem with putting them in and taking them out on Shabbat. It's a form of Binyan and Sphira.
They were
half round, we said. They were half round. And they went into a hole in the Sniff, yeah. Okay, so taking them, putting them in and taking them out is not Dosha Shabbos. Tosfos later on learns on the basis of Gemara on Shabbos that the problem is not building, the problem is Muktzah. And in fact, you have a Gemara in Shabbos where Rabbi Lozo, the Amora, wants to say that maybe this concept that they're not Dosha Shabbos only applied during the early time of the second Beit Mikdash when they had to make very, very strict rules about Muktzah because people were violating Shabbos.
So
in other words, either way, it would be according to Rashi, it's also Dirabbanan. But that maybe it's Daraisa. But according to Rashi and Tosfos, it comes out as only Dirabbanan. According to Rashi, because it's similar to building, and according to Tosfos, because of Mukta. So again, the Gemara in Shabbos there discusses. Rabbi Lozo wants to say the Gemara discusses there in Shabbos that in Nehemiah's time, early in the time of the second Beit Mikdash, they had to make very, very strict rules about Mukta because there were people who were openly violating Shabbos. Eventually, once people got more careful about the halachas, then the Chachamim were able to relax the dinning of muktzah until we reach the point where we are now, where you have various things that are muktzah, but not nearly as many as were originally. So therefore, of course, the Gemara brings up the possibility over there that maybe this that we're saying about the Kanim was also during that period. However, Rabbah disagrees and says that no, it's not a question of different times of muktzah, but if it's also, it's always also. It's not different times.
It's not building because it doesn't stay this way. You can take them out and put them.
But that's like building with Lego. I mean, if you look in a state like Shmiras Shabbos Tilchasa, you can see. If you look in a state like Shmiras Shabbos Tilchasa, you can see that he says, for example, that when it comes to building with Lego, he says you don't have to prevent kids from doing it on Shabbos, but adults shouldn't do it because it is a temporary building. It's also their bottom. It's to a certain extent. It lasts from 1 week to the next week by the Shulchan. So therefore, that's enough for a week. So putting up the Kanim and taking them out is not Dosha Shabbos. Again, either the problem is building or the problem is Mokta. Again, it's not a Malacha Daraisa, we're saying. It's either, according to Rashi, it's like a Malacha Daraisa, and according to Tosfos, it's an issue of Mokta. Elam Nichnas Me'erev Shabbos, rather what they did is like this. The Kohenim would come in on Erev Shabbos into the Heichal, the Shrentai, and they would pull out the Kanim from between each Lachem Aponim and the next one, the Noisne, the Orkosh or Shulchan, and put them along the length of the Shulchan. They would put them along the length of the Shulchan, meaning the Pashtas on the floor, on the floor next to the Shulchan. And then on Shabbos, they would put in the new Lachem Aponim. Then on Motzei Shabbos, they would come back in, and they would lift up each loaf and put in the Kanim underneath it. So from sometime on Friday afternoon until sometime on Shabbos day when they took off the old lechem aponim, the old lechem aponim are sitting there without tanim, and the new ones once they put them on are staying there without tanim from whatever time on Shabbos they put them on until Motzei Shabbos. And the Mishnah finishes off. Kol ha-kelim shari b'mikdash, orka ma'orka shabayis. All the kelim that were in the Beit Mikdash, the longer dimension of them was aligned with the longer dimension of the heichal. In other words, well, with the exception of the Aron, as we'll get to later, but in other words, and we're going to have a machlokas about this later on in Tzadik Ches, but the point is, in other words, for example, the Shulchan, we're saying was two amas by one amma. So what the Mishnah is telling us over here is, in other words, the two amas were along the length of the heichal. If this is the heichal over here, then the shulchan was placed like this, where the short ends of it, one's on the west and one's on the east, and the long ends are to the north and the south, rather than the other way around. And well, again, we'll have machlokes about that later on in the Gemara, and we'll get to into what the Rebbe talks about it in Rishonos HaMenorah about the deeper idea behind the different arrangements. Okay, fine. So the Gemara starts up. We said kol menachos yesh ben ma'aseh kli b'fnim. We said that all menachos have to be done with a kli sharet inside the azara. So shalos to Rebbe, zuminayim. So they asked Rebbe, where do we get that from? That menachos specifically have to be done using a keli inside the azara. Amalehem. So he says to them, harei yoyim. You have a pasuk in Yechezkel like this. So Yechezkel is describing the third base of the shibonim meir yamenu, and he describes certain chambers that they have over there that are by yoyim elai. He says to me, zeham mokav asher yivash l'shem ha-koyanim. This is the place where the koyanim will cook over there at the chatas beth ha-osham. Really, actually, the pasuk says it's the osham beth ha-chatas because those are kodshim. They have to be based in these special chambers, so they can't go out into the Eretz Yisrael. Asher yoyfu with a mincha, there also they bake a mincha, levilpi hoitzi ala chaser achisana, in order that it's not taken out into the outer chaser, because if it goes out into the outer chaser, then it becomes chaser, yoyfu. But the point is, mincha dumya de oshem v'chaser. So the point is, the pasuk is telling us that there's a certain comparison between the mincha and the oshem and the chaser. Therefore, ma oshem v'chaser tunin kli, just like the oshem and the chaser, we said we're talking about cooking. The jumi means because the pasuk is mentioning the chasas for osham and shayyos for mincha. So therefore they're all together. So just like the osham and the chasas, we're talking about cooking them. Of necessity, that means that you're using a keli. At mincha nami, so in a keli, the same thing. The mincha requires a keli. Now Tosfos points out we don't mean obviously it needs a keli when it comes to the avodas of it. Like we said, the koymes has to be taken from a kli sharet, it has to be placed into another kli sharet. We're not talking about that. We're talking about an earlier stage in it. We're talking about, as we said in our Mishnah, the kneading and the shaping of it. But that has to be done in a kli sharet, because the point is that you have menachos that are baked. You have menachos that are baked, but then you have menachos, you have a minchas solos, which is not baked, and the implication is that even those require a keli.
To make them Kodesh.
Well, not so much to make them Kodesh. Eventually they're going to become Kodesh when they're put in a Kli Sharet and the process of bringing the Mincha is started. But here we're talking about even the making of them, just like the cooking of the Asham and the Chatas has to be done in a Keli, and it has to be done inside the Azara, so also it is with the Mincha. Any prior stages that have to be done before it's actually started to be offered as a Mincha also have to be done in a Keli in the Azara. Then we said a shulchan orkei asara. We said we had two opinions in the Mishnah about the size of the shulchan, and therefore that made a difference of how much of each side of the lechem aponim was folded upward. We said according to Rabbi Yehuda, you had five flat on the shulchan and two and a half folded upward on each side, and according to the Meir, six flat on the shulchan and two folded up on each side. So it comes out, let's multiply each of those figures by six, because you have a stack of six lechem aponim on each side.
Two or two and a half
times six comes out respectively 12 and 15. The Amr of Yechanan, Ladivir Omer Tachayim Mechsakaisal, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that they folded up on each side 2.5 tachim, Nimsa Shulchan Makadish, Hamisha Asa Tachon Maila, then what it means is the Shulchan is able to be Makadish things up to 15 tachim above its surface. Now, we don't mean the lachan aponim itself. There's no chiddush in that. What we mean is, in other words, that, as we learned about this previously, that if you were to take a koymas of some other mincha, for example, and put it in that space within 15 tfachim above the height of the shulchan, then it has now, yushas aguf, in the sense that now if it's left overnight, it becomes kosher. We learned earlier a sugya about it, where Rashi learned that nevertheless you can still return it to the kli sharet and then take the koymas again and put it into a kli sharet where it's supposed to go. According to Tosfos, no, once you put it on the shulchan, then it's too late. It already became kaddish and a kli sharet, and there's nothing you can do with it but burn it. But the Paschal the Mincha. So up to 15 according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Divrei HaOmer, the Chayim Kofel, according to Rabbi Meir, that you only fold up two Tzvachim on each side, Nimt the Shulchan Mekadosh Yud Beis Tzvachim L'Maila. That means that the Shulchan is only able to be Mekadosh up to 12 Tzvachim off its surface. Okay, so we're asked that.
From the table.
From the table top. To the top of the last Tzvachim. So the question is, what about though you have the kanim that we mentioned in the Mishnah? They take up space between one lachan aponim and the next. Do you come up with more than 12 or 15 tzvachim respectively?
Right.
The answer is kanim shakui meshatalim. The answer is the kanim don't stick out between one bread and the next. They're embedded into the bread, which means Rashi describes when they're shaping the dough, they shape into the dough grooves such that the cannon can go into those grooves. So therefore, it doesn't add any extra space.
How do they shape them? The cannon themselves? Or
maybe. I don't know. So probably not the cannon themselves, because the cannon themselves are on the shulchan. No, well, never mind that. They're on the shulchan at that point. Keeping the other lachan aponim from spoiling. So the Pashas had a different set that they used for the baking. The question is, though, what's the whole reason to have the kanim? Mishum yakushi. The whole reason you want to have the kanim in the first place is to prevent the bread from becoming moldy, because you want to have air circulating between them. And mishum yakushi lachem, to keep the bread from spoiling. So what are you accomplishing? If you have the kanim are embedded in grooves in the lechem, it means there's no space between one lechem and the next. See, back to the problem, it's going to get moldy. What good are the kanim doing then?
Right.
The answer is the magba leipurja. The answer is the groove didn't hold the full height of the kanim. You have the kanim, let's say we suppose that each of the kanim was, I don't know, let's say a half inch thick. You have, let's say an inch thick, to keep things simple. So you have, let's say, three quarters of them goes into the groove in the lechem. You have a quarter of an inch, let's say, sticking out below each lechem. And that's enough.
The groove is
shallower than the kanim.
So
therefore, not the whole. No, that's the point. In other words, so therefore, not the whole height of the kanim fits into the groove. If the kanim
still know it.
No, that's the point. If the kanim are, let's say, an inch from top to bottom, and the groove in the lechem aponim is only 3/4 of an inch, then it means here ends the bottom of the lechem aponim, and then below that you have a little bit.
Say below the groove, the cunning?
What kind of mess? You made a groove in the lechem aponim, then you...
Let's say the groove is 2 inches, and the cunning leaves 1 inch of air in between. How does the chanach hold?
Okay, then you misunderstand. The groove is, let's say, 3/4 of an inch deep.
Right.
The cunning are, let's say, an inch deep. So therefore, when you put the lechem aponim on top of the cunning, 3/4 of an inch of the cannon disappears in to the groove in the lechem.
Right.
1/4 of it doesn't go in because there's no room for it. You have the actual substance of the lechem aponim there.
Right.
Therefore, 1/4 of an inch, let's say, sticks out on the bottom. That's enough to give air circulation. And you have similarly like that between each challah and the next one.
It gives air, but it doesn't give air above the cannon.
It gives air for the rest of it. That's good enough for our purposes. We also said the cannon are chassi konis hollow. That's why we said the cannon are shaped like half tubes in order that air can circulate through the middle of the cannon.
Okay.
Okay, so the question is, but Rabbi Yochanan said, the magdalay purta, the answer is it's lifted up a little bit because the groove in the bread doesn't go quite as deep as the depth of the cannon. Yeah, the problem is by Ikahu Purta. Still in that case, you don't have that it's exactly 12 or exactly 15 tzvachim. You have 12 tzvachim plus five times whatever the remaining thickness of the cannon is. So you're going to end up, let's say, with 13 tzvachim, and the same thing 15, and then up 16 or whatever. The answer is given to like having half a tzvachim. The total amount between all the cannon, the total amount that each lechem is lifted up above the one below it, totals less than a tzvachim. So we're not counting it. It's true. Technically, it's 12 and 3/4, it's 15 and 3/4, but we mean in whole numbers, it's 12 or 15 respectively. Okay. The question is, if you measured the height of each stack with the cannon in there, you would reach a total of more than 12 or more than 15 tefachim. However, it's only a little more. The amount doesn't reach a full tefach, because let's say you have...
How much?
It doesn't say how much. But what it doesn't say, but we can imagine for ourselves. If the Gemara is saying that it's totaled less than a tefach, and a tefach consists of 4 tzvos, and you had five rows of tannim, then obviously what it means is each one stuck out less than 4/5 of an tefach. So therefore it comes out to less than a tefach total, and therefore we're not counting it. Okay. So the question is, So the question is, well, you could bazichin. What about you also have to count the bazichin towards the height? Because, again, we had in the Mishnah, we had according to the Yehuda, the bazichin has to be on top of the lachan upon him because there's no room between them. According to the Meir, also, they're on top because it was only Abba Shol who said they go between the stack. So according to the Meir and according to the Yehuda, you could have to count the bazichin as well. Now, Rashi asks, question, what's the problem? The bazichin is not, the bazichin don't become kaddish through the shulchan. The bazichin, the levonah is inside of bazich, which itself is a kli sharet. Why do you need it? So why do we care if it's within the 12 or 15 height of the shulchan? So Tosfos says, okay, that's nevertheless though, the point is that the taking off the bazichin, off the shulchan, has to be similar to taking the kremet from mincha, therefore it has to be just like the kremet, has to be inside the kli sharet together with the mincha, so also the Gemara is assuming over here that the bazichin has to be inside the kli sharet, inside the 12 or 15 amma notional height of the shulchan. The answer is begavid alechem ha'ir. 15 tefachim or 12 tefachim, because depending on what we said, depending on the height of the shulchan. It wouldn't be makadosh. In other words, if you were to take a kremet of a mincha and put it more than 12 or more than 15 tefachim above the height of the shulchan, nothing happens. It hasn't been placed in a kli-sharet.
Okay.
It's not kremet, right? Okay. So again, the question is, well, if a bazichin, you have a bazichin, and the answer is the gavid alechem. See, the answer is those that stick out above the lechem. The bazichin were put, according to the Meir and according to the Yehuda, were put inside each of the top lechem upon. So therefore, they didn't contribute anything to the height. They were put inside. Each lechem upon, we said, was made like a box or like a boat, and the sides were folded up. So therefore, you have a hollow space in the middle, curved in or right. So we said the other day, we said at the beginning of the parak, that according to the opinion, it was made like a boat. They had to make a flat area inside each of the top ones in order for the bollocks to be able to sit on it. Right, but according to, if we say that it was like an open box, then it's bechlal, it's flat. So either way, the point is you have a flat surface to form. So therefore, l'bahadi lechem, have a kaini. So therefore, they only reach as high as the lechem. They don't stick out above the lechem upon him, so you still have 12 or 15. Okay. The question is, well, if a kronos, what about, we said in the Mishnah that each of the lechem upon him has kronos that are seven tefachim, that are seven etzbois tall? The answer is l'gabe de lechem, kaisel. The answer is those who are bent inward into the lechem. Six etzbois, four. Okay. Yeah. So l'gabe de lechem, the answer is they folded them inward into the bread. The lechem alayu nafle, and therefore the next lechem upon him is sitting on top of them. In other words, what you have is, so you have again, let's follow the opinion that the lechem upon him was square shaped, because that's usually how we learn, and again, the Rambam does pass in that way. So therefore it means you have a flat surface of the lechem upon him, you have the two sides that are sticking up at 90 degree angles there, then you have the top of it is bent inward. Those kronos are bent inward and go like this towards the middle of the lechem upon him. So therefore, so they're not actually sticking upward beyond the body of lechem upon him. They're bent over inward, and therefore then the next lechem upon him sits on top of it. Okay. So therefore again they don't add anything to that. Okay. The question is, what about though when the Torah describes the making of the shulchan in Parshas Terumah? And also when they describe how they actually made it in Bayakil, it says that it had a misgeret toifach tzaviv. A misgeret means a frame, toifach, of a tefach thick, tzaviv, all around. And the Gemara assumes, for purposes of the question, that the misgeret is above the tabletop. So in other words, you have a flat tabletop, then you have a rim, a tefach high around the shulchan, which would be the misgeret, and only on top of that you start putting the lechem aponim. So in that case, you have to add an extra tefach.
So you put the lechem aponim.
It sounds like you put the lechem aponim above the misgeret. Yeah.
Now how would they hold?
Well, the misgeret apparently would be thick enough that it would be able to hold those that you'd have. It goes around three sides, so therefore you have three sides of the lechem aponim are able to sit on one side of the shulchan on the misgeret, and three sides of it are able to sit. It would be like
a table.
It would be a tefach tall and a tefach thick, let's say, border going around the shulchan. So therefore you have you can place some on it. So again, therefore you should have to add an extra tefach, and then you should have to say 13 or 16.
Right.
The answer is Commander Omamis Gauja Lamasa Hosa. Rabbi Yochanan is following the opinion that the Gemara is going to discuss in a minute, that the Misgeret was below the tabletop. In other words, you have two ways of explaining how the Misgeret was made. One way of explaining is, like we just did, that it was a frame that went around the top of the table, like a border, so to speak, to keep things from falling off, and therefore the lechem aponim, according to that, would have to go on top of that.
Right.
The other possibility is that it was below the tabletop. In other words, the same way as you have some tables, that are, you have many tables that are made that way, like that one over there, for example, where you have a piece going down from the tabletop, going from one leg to another. And then, and so the shulchan and the Beis Mikdash, according to that, would have had something similar, going downward a tefach from the underside of the tabletop, going a tefach wide piece of wood, going from one leg to another. Yeah, so in other words, you have, here's a leg, here's the tabletop, and then you have, there's a piece going like this from one leg to another, like to help hold the legs together, and to then you put the tabletop on top of it. So according to that, this getup doesn't add anything to the height above the tabletop.
So according to that version, the Gemara thing would not mean Kofnach.
Exactly. And Ulamanda Om Misgauja Lamailar. So furthermore, even if you want to go according to the opinion that Misgeras was above the Shulchan, you could answer Parkudi Havim Misfautiga. You could answer that the Misgeras was not made straight up. It wasn't made as something that sticks straight up from the Shulchan. Rather, it was made like it's leaning over, it's leaning outward, sort of. So therefore, fine, you could say that it was on top of the tabletop, and it was a tefach tall, but it leaned outward from the tabletop. So therefore, the lechem aponim can still go directly on the shulchan. It was angled outward. Actually, the Sfasemis Hasagim wants to say a different explanation of Parkudi Mefaukida. He says maybe what it means is the bottom two lechem aponim, the bottom one from each stack, maybe was made slightly narrower in order to accommodate the scale. Okay, the point is that either way, either the Misgeres is below the tabletop and therefore doesn't factor in anyway, or it's above, but it's angled outward, or the Lachem Aponim is angled inward in the KKD, and therefore again the Misgeres, and therefore the Lachem Aponim is resting on the Shulchan itself. Okay. The Lechem, the Gavi the Shulchan, have a Yosef, and then according to that, the Lechem Aponim is sitting, so to speak, inside the Shulchan, because again you have the Misgeres surrounding it. But still, the Misgeres is only surrounding it. It doesn't add anything to the height. Kibitanya, as in fact we learn in a Braita, Rav Yossi and the Hoyasham Sniffin, Rav Yossi says that in fact there were no sniffing there at all, which Tosis asked a question. Yeah, Tosis asked a question in that case. And we have, the Pasuk says, it's Ksosav and Naki Yosav, and one refers to the canon and one refers to the sniffing. So how does Rav Yossi get around that? So, okay, I mean, you have,
according to him,
apparently there were no sniffins. So with that said, you have one of the Mephoshim in the back, Rebelozimeir Horowitz, wants to say that even according to Yossi, it means there were sniffin, however, they were attached to Misgeres rather than standing on the floor. So they weren't really fundamentally meant to hold the bread. Rather, he says, the frame around the shulchan held the bread in place. So therefore, in other words, according to him, the frame had to be on the top surface of the table. Otherwise, how is it holding the bread? So therefore, today we see that there's such an opinion. But again, it would mean that it was angled outward in order not to interfere with putting the lechem on the shulchan. Or again, according to the Sfasem, that the lechem itself was shaped slightly differently in order that can fit over the Misgeres and the
The base of the
lechem would have been slightly narrower. So the Chacham answer him, that doesn't work, because according to us, the Misgeres was below the tabletop, and therefore it just can't help to hold up the lechem aponim, therefore you have to have the sniffing holding up the lechem aponim.
Because it's too low.
By the way, here also Tosfos points out briefly over here and more extensively earlier in the parak that when we say according to the opinion that we're saying over here that the Misgeres held the bread, it means it only held the bottom one. That would mean though that affects the question of how the lechem aponim was shaped, because if you say it was shaped like a box, it's easy to understand, because then you have the bottom one is held in place by Misgeres, then the next one is directly above that, the next one directly above that, and you don't need anything else. Whereas if you say it's shaped like a boat, then you still need things in order to hold one up above the other one, because each one only contacts it. Then you need, you need sovos or whatever, at least you need the half tubes or whatever, So now, according to the opinion, that with the shulchan, that this Misgeres, that this frame around it, was below the tabletop. So in other words, according to that, it comes out that the actual tabletop of the Shulchan itself was just a flat board. That's how Rashi learns. If we say that Misgeres was below, then it means that the tabletop itself, and the tabletop, according to Rashi, is not necessarily attached to the legs and to the Misgeres. It just lies on top of it. So therefore, it means, in other words, the tabletop of the Shulchan could, in principle, be flipped over. Well, in that case, tavla amisapecha tmeya. Then it would mean, according to that opinion, that if you have something similar by a regular table, if you have a board that can be, that net can be flipped over and either side can be used equally well, then it would be able to be metabol tumah. Now, usually we have the rule that flat wooden kalim are not able to be metabol tumah.
Right.
Okay. Again, according to Rashi's understanding of the Gemara over here, what we're saying is like this. If we say this gauta lamasa, what it means is like this. You have four legs, you have this geref running between one leg and the other, around all the sides of the shulchan, then holding the legs together. Then you have, on top of that, lies the tabletop of the shulchan, not attached to them, in such a way that it can be flipped over. Flipped over means you could turn it upside down and use the other side again.
Right.
So therefore, according to that, we would say, well, not, I don't know, that's an answer, but if we say that the shulchan was made that way, maybe it made it easier to carry, I don't know. Whatever it is, if you say the shulchan was made that way, and we're going to learn a little further on, that the shulchan was able to be metabol tumah, so therefore that would imply that if you have such a thing in regular civilian use, that you have a tabletop or any other flat wooden board like that where both sides are meant to be used, then it can be metabol tumah. Even though it's a flat board, and usually flat boards are not metabol tumah, here we would say this is an exception.
Because it's detached from the leg?
Not because it can be flipped over because either side of it can be used. And therefore, effectively, the tabletop is considered, the base table is considered the receptacle of it. The question, the fact is, we're saying, according to that opinion, we can learn a din from that, as far as Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, that such a thing would be able to be in the Kabbal Tumah. L'divrei ami misgauta l'maylai. So, but according to the opinion, that the misgaret was above the tabletop, meaning that the tabletop of the Shulchan was not able to be flipped over. Then, according to that, tavla misapecha tiboylach. Then you would still have a question if you do happen to have a table that has a flat tabletop that can be flipped over, whether it would be makabel tumah or not. So you wouldn't be able to prove it one way or the other from the shulchan, which according to that opinion, the shulchan did have a rim going around the top surface of it.
And therefore
it would be different than a flat wooden board, therefore you couldn't, because it isn't. What do you mean, why? Because it's not a flat wooden board, it's a wooden board with a rim all around it. The shulchan is makabel tumah, but if you're going to say that that's how the shulchan was made, then it means you can't prove anything from that about a regular case where you have a flat wooden board that can be turned over on either side, whether it's makabel tumah. Because then you can't learn it from the shulchan, because it's not similar to the shulchan. That's what the Eichmann's point. Tosfos has a different understanding of the thing, tavla misapecha. Tosfos understands a little differently. If we say, Tosfos says, that the misgeret was below the tabletop of the shulchan, then what it would mean is it was attached to it. But then the point would be, though, how would such a wooden board be able to hold anything inside its receptacle only if it's flipped over? Only if you took the tabletop with the misgeret attached to it off the shulchan and flipped it over, then it's something that could contain things inside it. Whereas if you left it in its normal position on the shulchan, then it only has a flat surface. So therefore, Tosfos understands that what Rabbi Yechanan is saying is like, if we say the misgeret was lamasa, then the question, then we would know from that if you have a similar scenario in day-to-day use, you have a tabletop with a misgeret around the bottom of it, where the only way to make it a cleat kibble is to flip it over, we would say it's makabel tumah, since as we're going to say the shulchan is makabel tumah. If you say that the misgeret was above the shulchan, meaning therefore the shulchan's normal way of use was as a cleat kibble, because you have, under normal circumstances, can contain something inside its receptacle, then we wouldn't know what's the din if it has to be flipped over in order to use it. That's our choice of learning, the point of the Gemara. Okay, so the question is, miklal the shulchan bar kibbul l'tumah hu? So are you telling me the implication is that the shulchan is able to be mekabel tumah? Why should it be mekabel tumah hu? Why should it be makabel tumah? Okay, forget about the fact that it's flat. Fine, we can say there's exceptions to that. But on the face of it, it's a kli eis, it's a wooden keli, which is meant to stay in one place. And we have a rule, any wooden keli that is meant to stay in one place, a makabel tumah, is not makabel tumah. Plating, we're going to deal with afterwards. No, we're not talking about that. Okay. Okay, so here you have actually a machloikis. The Rambam understands kliyeh to the nachas, meaning that it's meant to stay in one place. There's no particular issue or anything on moving it, just it's meant to stay in one place. Therefore, it's not makabel tumah, as the Gemara is going to deduce now.
Regardless of what it's made?
As long as it's made out of wood, we're talking about. If it's made out of metal, then those rules apply. As long as it's made out of wood. The Raiva disagrees with that and says, when will it be considered Sliyeta Otzer L'Nachas, only if there's an Easter on moving it. The Raiva learns that apparently, that aside from what we're going to mention soon, that the Shulchan was moved, aside from that, the Raiva apparently learns that there was an Easter to move the Shulchan when not necessary.
And that's enough.
So therefore, according to him, that's only that would make it Sliyeta Otzer L'Nachas. If it was just because it's too big or heavy to move or whatever, then it wouldn't occur, according to him, it wouldn't. My time, why would a kliyeta also the nachas not in the kabel tumah? Dumya de sakra in him, because for a wooden keli to be tumah, it has to be similar to a sack, because you have a hekesh between them and the potting. We call kliyeta beged or stock. But at end, ma sack metalto molivadekam, so just like a sack is something that you can carry whether it's empty or whether it's full, afko metalto molivadekam. The same thing for a wooden keli to be in the kabel tumah, it has to be something that you could carry empty, that you could carry whether it's full or empty. But now, well, the Shulchan, again, is not meant to be moved. Now, the fact is, of course, in the Midbar, they moved it, but that's different because Mekoyme Kavua, it had a fixed place. Hashem told them when to move. It had a fixed place in the Mishkan, and Hashem told them when to move and when not. So that's different, as we saw before. So that's different. But ordinarily, once the Bismuth was built, the Shulchan is not meant to be moved on the face of it. So therefore, to create, and according to the Raiva, there apparently there would actually be an issue to move it. So therefore, to create the Osir Nachas, it's not like a sack in that sense. So why would it be Makabal Tumah?
Are you saying a Shulchan like this?
No, we're talking about the Shulchan in the Bismuth. A Shulchan like this is meant to be moved. They move these shul, they move these tables all the time. What are you talking about? Now, the answer is Shulchan Nami Makabal to Molivadek. And as a matter of fact, the Shulchan was moved sometimes when it's empty, when it's full or when it's empty. Kidur is Shlokish. And we know that like it was Shlokish then. The Amr is Shlokish. Because your Shlokish starts like this. My dichtiv ala shulchan atahor. What does it mean when the pasuk describes it with the lachmas on him? It says you place them on the shulchan which is tahor. So what do you mean? Tahor mikal deifatamei. So apparently the implication is make sure that the shulchan remains tahor when you put the lachmas on him on it, because there's a possibility of it becoming tahor. So how could that be? Again, if it's kliyeh to also the nachas, why is it makabel tumah? Ela melamed shmagbiin oisel oiler regal. This teaches us that they would lift it up to show to the oiler regal. Umarin bo lachem, they would show the lachem upon him on the shulchan that it was still fresh. But oimim lahem, and they would show to the people, to the oiler regal, and the kohen would show them. But oimim lahem, and they would say to them, reuchi baskem lifnei amokim. See how precious you are to Hashem, that a net is done for you. And what is the net? Kedivir Rabbi Shurban Levi, like Rabbi Shurban Levi says, the Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, net godol nasa b'lachem aponim, a great net happened with lachem aponim. Siluke kisidurai. When they took it off the shulchan, it was just as fresh and just as hot as when they put it on the shulchan.
But how could the people see something that was...
Okay, so first of all, you have the question, how far out did they take the shulchan? So you have some of the Rishonim to say that apparently it means they could have only, the furthest they could have brought it out is to the door of the Heichal. They couldn't bring it out any further. That Rish Lakish's point is that it was allowed to be moved at this time. That is why it's Makabel Tumah, because it was meant to be moved at times. But how far did they bring it out? So you have some Rishonim learn that they could only bring it out as far as the door of the Heichal, because any further out than that, it would become possible. The Lakham Afanim on it would become possible. Up to the door of the Heichal, and the people would see it from a distance. Other Rishonim learn, it would be pretty far from that for the people to see, but I don't know, it would be more than that, but whatever, the point is they could still see. And you have other Rishonim learn that, no, for this purpose they were allowed to make an exception, and they were allowed to bring it out into the Azara. Whether it's three times a year, I guess, on the Shul Shugam. A further question is how exactly the people saw that it's still hot. The Rashba brings in one of his shuvahs that they would actually see steam rising from it. The Radvaz says it's hard to understand. You don't usually see steam rising even if it's fresh bread. So he says, no, what it means is that they put on the new lachan upon him and take off the old one, and then the old, doesn't mean the shulchan itself could stay inside the heichal. They brought it closer to the door. This way the people could see them. The shulchan with the old lachan upon him in it. This way they could see the kohen taking off the old lachan upon him and putting on the new one. Then they would take the old lachan upon him and bring it around in the azara, because it can be anywhere in the azara. They would bring it out to bring closer and show the people, look, you can see it's still fresh.
And then they would take it back.
Then they would distribute it among the kohen. Then they would take it. Then that'd be the kohen. It could be anywhere in the azara, and the kohen would eat it. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so we were thinking the shulchan was not meant to be moved, therefore it's a clear off to the nachas. No, the answer is that it was meant to be moved at times. And we learn, and Taka from this process that calls it the shulchan atahar, implying it's able to be the kabel tumah, from that we learn this concept that three times a year they would lift it up and show it to the early level. Okay. Fine. So now the question is, the typically Mishrum Tzipui. Now we get to your question. Forget about the question about the Shulchan being a wooden keli and whether it's lifted up or not. You have the Shulchan is plated with gold. Gold, and in general, metal kalim have a whole different rule in halacha. Those you don't have, they don't have to have a sweet kibble. It doesn't matter if they're also the naches. Metal kalim in general on the kabbal shulma, much more broadly than wooden kalim. So the shulchan is plated with gold. Wouldn't that be reason enough for it to be the kabbal shulma? Ni loitznan, after all, don't we learn in a mishnah, in kalim, hashulchan, ni loitznan, haven't we learned in a Mishnah, Hashulchan, a table, that dovati, or folding stool, or like a buffet style table or something. It's been derived from a Greek word delphi, just like a table or a style table they made in Delphi, whatever. Anyway, shenifcha, in they have also in the Mishnayos that we learned for a yard site, you have the shaldrufati, also means over there, means a buffet or something, and in modern Hebrew these were delphes to mean a counter, like in a store or whatever. Yeah, anyway, that all comes from this. Yeah, shenifchasu, such things, a table or folding table, if they were partially broken, if they were nifchasu, if there's like a hole in it. There's a hole in the tabletop, let's say. Oy shechip and mashayish, or another possibility, if you covered the tabletop with marble, and marble is not makabel tumah, but the shear behind Makam are not the closest, but in either case, yeah, whether part of it was broken or whether part of it was plated with marble, there's enough space left on the table to put cups on it. Then the table is still makabel tumah. Because in other words, you still have a significant part of it that's used in its original way. That's wood, and it's makabel tumah as a table.
Only up to the point where the marble is.
No. The whole thing is going to become tummy together. Yeah, if one part of it becomes tummy, the whole thing is going to become tummy.
Even though it's covered with shayish?
Even though most of it is covered with shayish, because you have enough left to put cups on. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a mocham anach of katichas. Rabbi Yehuda says that's not enough to have a space where you could put cups. You have to have a larger amount that wasn't covered with marble, namely enough to put pieces of meat on it. The point is, sheer in lo sheer loy. Only if you left over that minimum amount, enough for cups or enough for pieces of meat, then you would say that it's still makabel tumah, because it's still usable in its original form, loy shir loy, but apparently if you didn't leave any of it unplated, then none of it would be makabel tumah, because now it's covered with marble. Now the point is, marble is not makabel tumah. On the other hand, gold is makabel tumah. So therefore, if we're going to say that once a table is completely covered with marble, then it's not makabel tumah anymore, by the same logic, if it's completely covered with gold, it should be makabel tumah, whether it's movable or not. So why are we saying that only because the shulchan is movable, only because it was lifted up for the oiler bagel, isn't makabel tumah? You should have to consider that there's the plating on it. So you might answer that the difference may be between whether the plating is attached Oymed means actually from kavu of a masmer, that's attached to the table with nails, or kan b'tzipa she'enu oymed, versus one that's not attached. So then we could say that the plating on the shulchan in the Bis Mikdash was not attached with nails. Now we know, for example, with the aron it wasn't. We know the aron, that we could argue that there's a difference. We could argue that if the plating is attached to the table, then fine, the table is bottled to the plating. And therefore, we can say the table is bottled to the plating, because the plating is attached to it. Therefore, we can say that if the plating is makabel tumah, so is the table. But if we say it's not attached, then we know. For example, the Aron in the Bis Mikdash, we have the famous explanation that the Gemara brings in Yuma. Rashi brings it on the Pasuk that you had. There was an inner wooden box, and then there was a wooden box, and there was an inner golden box that fit inside that, and an outer golden box that fit around that. So therefore, it wasn't like gold leaf or whatever. It was actually a box within a box within a box. So you could argue the same thing was true with the shulchan, and in that case, you could argue that maybe the shulchan is not makabel tumah on that basis. Tosfos learns differently. That Tosfos brings another possibility. Tosfos brings another possibility, which is that oymed could be that we're talking about a thick plating where if you remove the table, the plating would be able to stand on its own, versus ena oymed would be a thin plating where it wouldn't stand on its own. So then we could argue maybe that the plating on the shulchan of this mikdash was not thick enough to stand on its own, and therefore maybe it doesn't affect the tumah status of the table. Tosfos mentions that. Yeah. The problem with that is Well, okay. Well, I think we'll have to continue with the problem with that tomorrow, actually, because we're running out of time over here. But one thing we should point out in this sugya is that Rambam has a completely different understanding of what plating does. The Rambam learns exactly the other way around. That if you have a wooden table plated with gold, for example, the Rambam learns you go according to the wood, not according to the gold. So we're saying over here, according to Rashi and according to everybody else, including the Ravid argues on Rashi's Tosfos, and the Ravid argues on the Rambam on that, that once a wooden table is plated with gold, you go according to the gold. The Rambam would learn that, no, you always go according to the wood, and you ignore the gold. So how the Rambam would understand our sugya, the Pesach Mishnah, has a long, long discussion in Hilchos Kalin, how the fact is that Rambam knew of our Gemara over here. So we'd have to have some other way of explaining our Gemara. That's it. You'd have to have some other way of saying that over here, that one idea is that maybe the other way around. We'll say, when we say the Kippur Kalimi Shum Tipuri, the question is not why shouldn't we say the table is the Kabbal Truma automatically because it's plated with gold. The question is just the other way around. Why is the table the Kabbal Truma if it's plated with gold, and plating should remove the ability for it to be Makabal Chomer?
What about Shires?
That's what I'm saying. The Kesef Mishnah has a
same thing like gold?
Yeah, so that's the Kesef Mishnah.
Okay, right.
That's what the Rambam would understand. That's the beginning of how the Rambam would understand.
So
the Rambam would say, if you have a wooden table, which is able to be Makabal Chomer, like, but then you plated it with gold, then that takes away the ability of it to be Makabal Chomer. Exactly the opposite of the way we just learned
in
Yom.
Wood is
not a Kabbal Tumah. So that's the argument. In other words, the Rambam would understand. So the Rambam would understand the Gemara to say that if it was just a wooden table, then it would be a Kabbal Tumah. Because it's plated with gold on the face of it, it should not be a Kabbal Tumah. And eventually, the answer is going to come later on in the Gemara that we ignore the gold plating in so far for this purpose, as far as the dinu of Tumah Vatari, in this one case of the Shulchan.
And we just stick by the wood.
So therefore we say that once it's a, then we have the usual rules for wooden kalim, where as long as it's not also the makas, as long as it's meant to be kicked up, which the shulchan was, then it's makabel tumah.
And nothing to do with that table?
No, so again, in other words, we're talking about it's a table, it's meant to be eaten on, that itself is considered the base table, but if it was also the makas, it wouldn't be makabel tumah, because it's not also the makas, because it's meant to be picked up and shown to the other regal, therefore it's makabel tumah.
Nothing to do with
plating. Right, well, so again, the Rambam would understand that just the opposite. The plating should take away the ability of it to become tame. But the Gemara is going to explain later on, we'll deal with it tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that there's a pasuk that calls the table eight wood, and therefore has the dinim of a wooden keli, even though the particular one is plating. Okay, so
one plating is thicker than the wood.
The Rambam apparently doesn't make such a distinction. Tosfos is the one that makes such a distinction if the plating can stand on its own or not. But again, Tosfos is going according to the shita that once the table is plated, that makes it more able to be Makabel Tumah because you go according to the plating. Yeah, okay, but that's, the Rambam is also logical. So it's different for showing them different ways of it. Okay.
Oh, yeah.